Chapter 15. The Troubled Waters. Opposition to Jesus on account of his good deeds had already begun. Indeed, it began with the chief priests, the scribes, and the rulers just as soon as they saw that Jesus came to help the people. They found early in his work that he was no common rabbi. The rabbis who had gone before Jesus or who were teaching at the same time were servile to authority. What had been done, they would do. What had been taught, they would teach. Other rabbis had not caused any of the rulers or false teachers any anxiety. They simply told what had been told them and never investigated or contradicted any of the statements made to the common people by these chief rulers. The other rabbis had taught something like this. I tell you this because I was taught by Rabbi Ben Moses, and he said it was true. He was taught by Rabbi Ben Hadid, who said the same thing. Yet Rabbi so-and-so says this is all false. When Jesus spoke, he said, Verily, verily, I say unto you. His word was authority without the endorsement of any other rabbi. That is the kind of teacher you want. And as the pupil of such a teacher, you are happiest when you have learned of him, so you can say, I too know whereof I speak. And I know that I know. Jesus knew the Old Testament. His mother must have been very familiar with it, as you can see when you read the Magnificat. The study of the books of the law, the prophets, the poets, and the chronicles of his nation must have been a joy to Jesus and insensibly shaped his intellectual and moral life. Jesus was a child like other children. He was a boy like other boys, and one day he was exactly the same age as you, who are now studying the story of his life. Today, the technical schools are established all over the enlightened world, but they are not a new thing. The plan of having our young students use the hands with the brain is as old as the history of the Jews. Love handiwork, said Skemaia, a teacher of Hillel. Unite the study of the law with a trade, said Gamaliel's family. For this keeps away sin, whereas study alone is dangerous and disappointing. The most respected of the rabbis gave a third of the day to the study of the scriptures, a third to prayer, and a third to labor. When these learned men all labored with their hands because they were not allowed payment for their instruction, it made honest industry a thing to receive honor instead of shame. It made every boy proud and glad that he had a good trade and could make a good living by his knowledge of and his ability to work at that trade. What a wonderful rabbi Jesus was! He not only was learned in all he could get from his books, but his keen eyes always saw all that was to be seen. Sometimes in your primary grades you have been required by teachers to tell what you saw on your way to school. Perhaps your eyes have been trained to see things in the great book of nature. Perhaps you have lived in town and you have learned to read the great book of man. You have been told that Christ knew about the flowers of the field. He knew about the birds, the fowls, the animals. He knew about children and the simple sports of childhood. He knew about the rejoicings of the happy, and he knew, oh, how well he knew about the heartaches of the poor, the sorrowful, and the sick and afflicted. He knew men as no one else knew them. In his human nature, there must have been just such growth and development as there is in your life, as there has been in the lives of your teachers and older fellow workers. Did you ever wonder if Christ sometimes grew tired of the monotony of his life and longed to get away over and beyond the hills out into the great world? He saw the caravans that passed near his home, going from Egypt to Damascus and from the farther east down to Egypt. And was he unlike other boys in wanting to join one and go out and see the great world? Did it require no self-denial to daily do the little next duties required of him in the home? Ask yourself the same question and answer for him. Where did he learn his wonderful patience and heroic meekness and self-control if he did not learn it in his boyhood at his daily study and labor? There never has been and there never will be any other way to become a hero than by the simple way of doing exactly the best one knows how to do in the daily duties one is not over-fond of doing or really dislikes to do at all. In reading the story of the life of Jesus, you should turn to St. John to get the beautiful spiritual side of life. You remember St. John tells the story for the joy and comfort of those who believe in it and trust Jesus as the Messiah, as their Savior, friend, Redeemer. You know St. John wrote his gospel after the other evangelists, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, had written theirs. And you remember that he records only such miracles as will teach some great truth along the spiritual line. Yes, you remember this. The story we are about to tell about the troubled waters, only John records. You have read about the pilgrims who go to Lourdes for healing, and a good description of what has been seen there in late years would give a picture of what was seen 2,000 years ago in the porches of Bethesda at Jerusalem. Nearly every country has its mineral springs, its baths, hospitals, and medical schools where the blind, halt, and lame go for healing. At Jerusalem was a noted spring, perhaps like the one at Kissingen, which every day after a peculiar hissing sound, like escaping gas, commenced to bubble. Those who want the best results from the use of this water try to use it at the very time the gas is making its escape. The superstitious at Jerusalem thought an angel or some sort of a messenger went into the water and troubled it, and the scrambling to be first into the pool after this troubling was a most pitiful sight. In the spring, when it came time for the feast of the Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. One Sabbath at even, when Jesus was going about doing good, he came to this pool of Bethesda, where were five large porches. In these porches lay a great multitude who were blind, lame, sick, and paralyzed, all waiting for the troubling of the waters. And every one of this great crowd hoped he would be the first one to get in at just the right time. Some of these people could help themselves. Some had friends to help them, and some had been brought this far and hoped that some way, somehow, they could get help from somebody. What a pitiful sight this must have been to the tender-hearted Jesus. Every deformity that you can imagine was there. Think of all the twisted backs and bent arms and shortened legs, eyes sore and blind, old and young, men who could not speak, and boys who could not walk. It is a picture full of gloom and sadness. Did you ever notice how the trained eye of the physician goes to the source of the greatest danger? So Jesus, as one day he came among these people, spoke to the saddest and most hopeless case on the porch near him, and in his kind tone said to the man, "Wouldst thou be made whole?" What would you have said if Jesus had asked you that question? To be made whole means a great deal. The great teacher, Joseph Cook, once said that there were but few full-orbed men. Whatever he meant by that, you can imagine if you ever noticed the complete orb of the moon at the quarter. And the real test of a boy or girl, of a man or woman, is the answer of that question which Jesus asked of this certain man who had been sick 38 years, nearly 14,000 days. Do you know of any class of boys who have for a motto, "I am my brother's keeper"? There certainly had not been such a class organized on any one of those five porches to help the impotent folks into the troubled waters. For this man said to Jesus, "Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me." What a word picture this poor man makes. You can see the selfish scramble and rush and push for the best place. You have all been in just such a jam so dreadful as to take little elderly women or little girls off their feet. Jesus looked at the crowd. He looked at the poor, sick man who had been a hopeless invalid all those long years, and he said to the man, "Arise, take up thy bed and walk." And straightway the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. Yes, St. John tells more about this man who was made whole He tells about the opposition of the chief priests. It was the Sabbath day, and the man had picked up his poor little blanket and gone away glad. Oh, how glad that Jesus had healed him. But the priests grumbled because Jesus healed the man on the Sabbath. But was it not beautiful that Jesus helped this man who had been sick for 38 years? Does it not make you sure that you will lend a hand the very next time you see a burdened or discouraged soul? Those who are looking for healing from some wonderfully troubled waters are all about you. They do not wear their hearts on their sleeves. You will have to look for them. But like Bunyan's Christian, they are striving to get out of the slough of despond alone, and they want to get out next to the wicket gate. You remember how Bunyan in his dream saw a man whose name was Help come to Christian, who was in the slough, and say, "Give me thy hand." So he gave him his hand, and he drew him out and set him upon sound ground and bid him go on his way.